You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 11 November. We've got local unemployment data due 11:30. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Petli Radenhuis, Serenia Capital Advisors. The AI boom. I mean, last week there was all the worry that it was over and we had the people doing shorts and everything. I don't know. Surely it's NVIDIA results. Those are next Wednesday. We'll get Petli's view. Ian Anderson for Merchant West Investments. Another great year for local REITs. 24 was an excellent year. 25 is proving to be a solid year as well. I think October was 10% up. And then we're going to check with the Beef Master Group. Importance of the Asian markets. They've just been in Asia with the president as they try and open those markets. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. The Fashini Group says almost entirely extractive online gambling is greater threat than Sheen, but serious questions remain about their retailers' strategy and growth. Business Day, Sibanye suffers 3.7 billion rand blow from failed Brazilian mine deal, but the out-of-court settlement may help the miner avoid a more costly outcome due to a looming trial that was supposed to start yesterday, but the settlement means no trial. Morning markets. Yes was green. S&P 1.5% higher. Nasdaq 2.2% higher. The East is mixed. We got Sydney and Turkey a little under 0.5% higher. We got Hong Kong down 0.33% and Tencent 1% low. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures 4,150. Brent is the red at 63.91. Platinum 1,603. Palladium 1,463. Rand is 17.50. Bitcoin 106,800 and top 40 opening call at green open 290 points or a little under 0.3% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Petli Radenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors. Petli, appreciate the early morning time. Strong performance in the US last night, but all of last week there was worries. We've got the Michael Burry or Burry, whatever it is, shorts on NVIDIA and Palantir and just a general worry about the AI. I suppose two questions. The first is, I mean, AI is real. We can debate who's going to make money from it, but it's going to be around forever, much like the internet of 25, 30 years ago. And the second part is the one to watch then just NVIDIA. They've got results next Wednesday. And if those results carry on going, all is good. When those results stumble, all is bad.
Morning, Simon. And in a nutshell, yes. Their results are out on the 19th. I think if they disappoint, the market will be very disappointed. We've seen the US market is not afraid to move 10 or 20% on good or bad numbers.
But
numbers are good, you know, all is well and the market grinds higher. If the numbers are bad, the opposite applies. I think that's the short-term way of looking at it. So a couple of things that you mentioned leading into this, which I absolutely agree with, Ryan. In the year 2000, and admittedly this was before I even left high school, to be fair, but there was the dot-com bubble, right?
Yep.
Everything with the dot-com, Amazon, for example, Microsoft, these things absolutely flew, in that sort of era leading up to the year 2000. And anything that was a tech company or a dot-com or an internet-based company was absolutely flying. So a few things happened there. One, the market overextended on this excitement that the internet was absolutely going to change the world in more ways than we can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And the share prices got way ahead of earnings and eventually, you know, it crashed. But then also, you know, fast forward 25 years and Amazon and Microsoft are massive companies.
So
that crash looks like, you know, a blip. The internet actually changed our life in more ways than we could have imagined at the time. It actually did a lot more than what our wild fantasies were, in 2000. So, you know, that I think is similar to what is happening today. we are seeing, you know, share prices get way ahead of earnings. At some point, they will take a fairly big tumble. But in 25 years from now, AI, to your point, will still be here, will be even bigger than we can imagine today. What we think the wildest, craziest, most amazing use cases today, you know, from the .com sort of blueprint, shows us that whatever we think is like a cool idea today, in 25 years from now, is going to be, it's going to be much better, right? So that begs the question, do you just buy some NVIDIA and stick it out? Well, a few things. There's no guarantee NVIDIA is going to make it, right? Other competitors could emerge. 5 years is a long time. So one way to play it is just buy the ETF, right? Mm-hmm. Buy an ETF. It's a broader market AI exposure. It's a much safer way to play it. Yes, your stock return might be lower if you don't catch the, you know, the big one, but you are a diversified you know, player in the game, at least. The other alternative is, like, well, something to think about is that it will at some point, you know, at some point we'll have our .com moment. At some point the markets will pull back. At some point there will be a 10, 20, 30% correction. And that'll be a massive opportunity. So if you have some now, save up some cash, right? Trying to time exactly when this thing is going to top out, I've been trying to do for the last year. And it hasn't worked. Right? I've been bearish, saying, look, fundamentally the markets have come down, which is still true. However, the market doesn't want to do it. So if you have to try to – timing it is the hardest thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. So it's much easier to just sort of buy in and let it run and keep cash on the sideline so that when it eventually does crash, because it will – you can buy some more because it will again recover and will again run like mad. Think of the .com sort of bubble as a blueprint. And then the other thing, the last thing, I'm sorry that I'm taking long, is buy the shovels and the picks and not the gold rush. So I'll give you a stock tip, and I'll only give you one, but there are many. Well, not that many, but there are a few. It's called Lynas Rare Earths Limited. LYNAS, all right? The ticker, as it trades in America, is LYSDY.
Okay.
So we've had this conversation. Are you bullish AI? You must be bullish energy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
AI needs energy to run. So the energy complex is still very good. The other option is rare earth minerals. You need the stuff to make microchips. You can't do without it. China's the world's biggest supplier. The entire trade deal with America and China essentially hinged on access to rare earth minerals. This stuff is essential. So these are the shovels and picks. You need energy, you need rare earth minerals.
I hadn't thought of that. There's lots of way to play those shovels. I hadn't thought of some rare earths. 100%. We'll leave that there. Peter Radin here, Serenia Capital Advisors. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and at Twitter. Is it all about NVIDIA results? I think it is for now. Longer term, there's a lot more playing out there. And as Petri says, there's ETFs. There's a bunch local listed. There's One Invest. There's Signia, both good in the space. But have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Ian Anderson, portfolio manager at Merchant West Investments. Ian, appreciate the time. The SA REIT October monthly chart book is out. I got to say, after 2024, where we did almost 36% in the REIT sector, October 10.8%, up 26% for the year. The REITs are continuing to tear ahead. I mean, I hold some, I'm quite happy with it, but it is phenomenal return for a sector that's had a tough couple of years in the lead up to this.
Absolutely, Simon. And I think the important thing now is we're starting to see real institutional investor support for the sector. It came through in the volumes that were traded, the fact that Vukile was able to raise 2.65 billion rand in an accelerated book build. Mm-hmm. You know, the momentum that was building earlier in the year has now really gone into overdrive. And you know, even though I've been very positive on the sector, I would not have expected, you know, to do almost 11% in a month, especially after what you said, after last year and the start that we had this year as well.
the thing is, I mean, there's a bunch of drivers to it, but underpinning it is ultimately its earnings, its distributions. I mean, yes, we're getting a closing of that discount to NAV and the like, but this isn't sort of frothy excess as we were seeing a decade ago. This is based on fundamentals to a fair degree.
Absolutely. This year, certainly. So last year, I think it was all about, you know, reducing those very large discounts to net asset value as people got a bit more optimistic about the prospects for the sector. But this year, it's absolutely been about an improving fundamental backdrop. And a lot of it's driven by declining interest rates and lower borrowing costs. But we have seen very little new supply coming on stream. It means that, you know, market rentals are starting to grow now. Yeah. There's not the same big reversions, other rental reversions, other than maybe in one or two office nodes. And we saw it in, you know, sort of the redefined numbers and that. But by and large, most of the property sectors in South Africa are delivering good net property income growth. And it's coming through and it's going down to the bottom line. You know, Octadecker is the last company, and I didn't make mention of it in the SA REIT chart book, but Octadecker is the latest company to come out with a very positive trading statement.
It is. And you mentioned the lower rates. That obviously helps. And we saw that in the Redefine results, and I chatted with them, what it was last week. And they've obviously got European debt as well, so there's a blended. But as those come down, if you're sitting on an LTV of, I don't know, 35-40%, it does have a good impact on your earnings.
Absolutely. And the other thing that it does do is it provides you the opportunity to start growing externally. And we've seen so many companies announce acquisitions, not big acquisitions at this stage. Mm-hmm. They're smaller acquisitions, you know, a few hundred million rand, but they're able to fund these with a cost of capital of somewhere between 8.5% and 9%. That's a blend between the debt and equity. And some of these properties are being bought on yields of 10% and above. So there is this opportunity for external growth, which the sector just has not had in the last 5 or 6 years. And investors are getting excited about that.
In terms of asset allocation, do lower South African government bond yields also help? Because that's often where the comparison is. And we've seen that coming down over the course of the year, which then kind of turns some attention to the REITs as well for that yield.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think October was about that too. So the fact that we've seen bond yields drop almost 300 basis points in the last year has been very positive for REITs. Obviously, it's a competing asset class for investors. The yields there are below 9% on average, which is more or less where the listed property sector finds itself today. But the big difference is the fact that that income from the property sector is now going to grow at around 6, 7 or 8%. And that makes them attractive relative to the bond market. So even though the yields are more or less the same, it's the growing income from property that appeals to investors.
That's absolutely it. I mean, you get that yield. If you're buying an 8% yield this year, you're hoping that that's going to increase year after year. And that's a big part of the attraction of the space over a bond, where, as you say, you're in for that yield until duration.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
If we look forward, and I'm not asking you to predict the future, because I think if I'd said to you, are we going to do 26.4% year to date end of October, you would have thought I was a little bit crazy. But it comes to the earlier point. We're not looking at a sector that is overpriced. We're still discounting net asset value. This isn't a expensive sector. This isn't something, you know, that, you know, this isn't AI where the valuations are crazy. Valuations are probably around fair.
Yeah, I think so. And that's why, you know, if you are thinking about future returns, it's probably just going to be the yield and whatever growth these companies are able to achieve. And so if you say, let's say the average yield is around 8 or 9%, and then you add a 6 or 7% growth rate to that, you're still looking at sort of mid double digit returns, which is very, very good. You know, and I think if the companies had suddenly started to trade at big premiums to net asset value, I'd be a lot more concerned about where the valuations are. But at the moment, as I said, last year was all about just unwinding those big discounts. Mm-hmm. This year has been about those growing incomes. And almost every company without fail has recently upgraded their guidance. And as I mentioned, Octadecker was the last one to do it. In fact, Octadecker, you're getting a double-digit yield. So the yield is in excess of 10% on a 75% payout ratio, growing at 7 to 9%. You don't get that. You don't find that anywhere else in the market.
Yeah.
And so that's where the attraction lies. It's the fact that you get that high yield, but importantly, you're also getting that growing income. I'm not expecting more re-rating. So yes, we may go to slightly lower discounts to net asset value, but that's definitely not going to be the major driver of returns into the future. It's going to be income yield plus income growth.
Yeah, some growth, some yield, and that's going to give you some nice return, which is what we look for when we are looking at REITs. We'll leave it there. Ian Anderson, Portfolio Manager at Merchant West Investments, and we're chatting the SA REIT October monthly chart book. Ian, appreciate the time.
The Stand-Up Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stand-Up Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting now with Lof van Rhuyn, and he's executive chairman at the Beefmaster Group. Lof, I appreciate the time. Towards the end of last month, you were in Asia with a presidential delegation, talking lots of things. But of course, the focus for yourself is the beef industry, potential Asian market. This could be an important and frankly, potentially a huge market for our local beef industry to export into.
Thank you, Simon. Good morning. Yes, we indeed have now been to four of those countries, and with a state visit that sincerely helps to have political influence and basically political willingness to open those markets is a great for us.
What is the challenge in opening the markets? I mean, it can't be the quality of our beef. I'm sure that's as good as it gets. What are sort of the issues being raised?
It's always trade, you know. So there's negotiations on what products to export to which countries, and you know, do we have affiliations with those countries in some other way? So it's a political connection. That's the most important one, and we've been trying to do that for some time, and now at least we've got the door open to that side of the world. That it's a huge market, 700 million people.
Wow!
So it's really. It's really something for us.
A challenge back home, foot and mouth disease. How's that progressing? I mean, I to be honest, I haven't looked into it in a while. Are we winning that fight? Because that must be, I would imagine, a concern for potential export markets.
I can tell you one thing, that the Department of Agriculture is certainly doing what they can. Mm-hmm. And it's really getting to a point where they intervening with a lot of good ideas, and it's certainly getting to a, let's say, to a better state, you know. Mm-hmm. But we're not winning that fight yet, and at the moment there's a lot of challenges with that movement of animals, and it's becoming a threat for other animals as well. Just remember, it's basically a disease that affects all clothed animals.
Yeah, yeah.
So in other words, any game or any one of the small stock as well. So it's a challenge, Simon. It certainly is a challenge. But that's not to say that we can't deliver the product to markets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our product is still very safe. It doesn't affect people at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically, if you treat the product correctly, you know, like you should,
mm-hmm.
at the right temperatures, and if you do the processing correctly, then the virus is not transmitted.
Okay.
So, you know, basically when it comes to export markets, some of them don't have the challenges of a local herd. So they're not worried about the disease, you know.
Okay.
So we can export to some of those countries, and these are one of them.
You mentioned the Asian markets. I mean, potentially 700 million people. I mean, that's what, 10x bigger than South Africa. This would be a major benefit to the industry. I mean, I'm thinking employment, I'm thinking foreign currency. It'll be a major benefit to South Africa as a country. How much, if we look at the sort of the beef, the livestock industry, what sort of employment numbers are we looking at more broadly?
I can't give you exact figures, but it's into the tens of thousands, you know. So I think I won't be surprised if it's over 100,000 people that can be directly affected with this. So the point is that we export about 40 million kilograms of beef every year.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe that market could be a potential 10% of that. So we could go back to the numbers we had before the exports, which is in excess of 2.5 billion rand
mm-hmm.
a year. And I mean, that would substantially increase job growth, you know, or maybe even just sustain the jobs that we currently have because of the disease. So that is the main aim, is to be able to create more work and opportunities for people, especially the farming community.
Yeah.
You know, cattle are in the rural areas the number one asset that the farmers have. I'm talking about the up-and-coming farmers, rural farmers. So they want to have good markets for their cattle, and that's where we can most probably see the biggest growth because of this.
Yeah, and it's for those allied industries as well that benefit downstream from it. We'll leave it there. That's Lof van Rhuyn, Beefmaster Group Executive Chair. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We're chatting with Nkunza Sanlam, a private wealth, yesterday. JC is reviewing headline earnings per share disclosure rules. We asked you if this was a good idea. Their plan is to reduce company costs. Three quarters of you said nope, it is a crucial number you look at. The rest was split between you never use it and you don't need it. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow from Mag 7 to Mag 70.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.